This is the Thriving Dentist Show with Gary Takacs, where we help you develop your ideal dental practice, one that provides personal, professional, and financial satisfaction.
Welcome to another edition of the Thriving Dentist Show. I'm Gary Takacs, your show host. Very excited to have a new friend on the Thriving Dentist Show, and we're going to talk about a subject that he and I are both very, very passionate about. Weston Lunsford. Hey, Weston, how are you?
Hi, Gary. Good. It's good to be here today with you, and I love that you're calling me a friend. We've had a couple conversations, and I've enjoyed all that we've had to talk about. Sounds like we see eye to eye, especially on these numbers. So,
Without a doubt. And Weston is from the Provo, Utah area, and we're going to talk more about the work he's doing with dentists around the country. But our topic today, let's just kind of blow the top off of it for our listeners, Weston. Our topic is we're going to talk about KPIs, key performance indicators, and in particular, we're going to do a deep dive into the whole science of measuring case acceptance. What do you think about that, Weston?
Yeah, I love case. Case is one of the most difficult things to really track. And what I mean by, I guess first, what I'd like to do is kind of talk why case is important or really about the metric of case. But I'll let you steer the direction of it. Well, probably one of the most important metrics you can monitor to help increase the performance in your practice.
I absolutely wholeheartedly agree with that. In fact, Weston, in my own practice at Life Smiles, we measure on a monthly basis 20 KPIs on a monthly basis. And I could take the coach of the debate team approach and argue that each one of those metrics is most important. You know, it's kind of like choosing your favorite kid, your favorite child.
Yep.
Yeah, you can't do that.
And everyone has an opinion.
Everyone has an opinion. But I might just go out on a limb here and say of the 20 KPIs, the key performance indicators that we use at Life Smiles, I personally think the most important one is our case acceptance percentage and our case acceptance metrics, how we measure that.
I love that you're even saying that. Mainly because when we talk to so many dentists across the country, it's very difficult for any of these dentists to even start to try to track case. And so many of them push it to the table and it's not something they focus on.
But I gave up on it for many years because it was just too difficult to get my arms around it. I knew it was important. And before we had a good way of measuring it, which, by the way, was deeply influenced by your team, Rob Bay and others in your firm helped me with this. But before we really got our arms around it, the only way we could measure it was anecdotally.
Right.
And Weston, let me tell you the flaw in that. So Paul and I, Paul Nielsen is my dentist business partner at Life Smiles. And we would hike on Saturday morning. I live near a desert preserve, a mountain preserve, where there's a great trail system behind my house. And on Saturday morning, we'd get up at before sunrise, and we'd hike 2.5 miles to a peak in the McDowell Mountain Preserve. And so a round trip, it would be 5 miles, and we'd hike very quickly, so it'd be a cardio hike. And that's when we would talk about our practice, and we'd talk about things we need to work on. And before we had a good way of measuring it, I'd ask Paul, hey, how are we doing on case acceptance? And he'd answer me anecdotally. He might say something like, well, Gary, yesterday we saw two new patients. Both of them needed crowns. I presented them to them, and both of them accepted, so I guess we're doing good. Right?
It was emotionally based.
Right. Or conversely, hey, Gary, we had two new patients yesterday. Both of them needed treatment. I presented the treatment recommendations to them. Neither one of them accepted, so I don't think we're doing very well.
Yeah, right.
And by the way, neither of those perspectives had any possibility of being accurate because it was based on your memory of those, not on data. And yeah. Rob, I heard we were talking about this a little bit before I hit the record button, and you share a favorite saying of mine. You and I share an interest in this saying, and the saying goes like this, numbers don't lie.
Right.
People do. And when I say lie, I don't mean that in a, in a cynical way. But people lie, but numbers never lie.
That's the greatest thing about looking at data and looking at it regularly is it's always going to show you what is going on in your practice or anywhere in any aspect of life, but for sure in a dental practice, it will always show you what's happening.
Hey, before we go any deeper, let me take a minute and credential you to our listeners. And Weston, would you do me a favor and keep me honest as I do this?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So I'm going to give a short version. I'll do the Reader's Digest short. If I was to list all of your credentials, we might use up the entire show, and we've got a lot of number stuff to talk about. Anyway, in dentistry, your history goes back a dozen or so years ago when you started an accounting firm, a CPA firm that worked with healthcare providers, physicians and dentists, and you were a little bit different in the accounting world in that you weren't just doing tax planning and tax returns, but you were really focusing on what I would call CFO consulting. In other words, helping your clients master the financial sides of their business. Is that a good way to characterize that?
Yeah. I mean, we still did bookkeeping work. We still did tax work, but our forte was taking a very proactive approach with the numbers and doing CFO, like chief financial officer type services for our dental practices, helping them really understand the numbers in their practice, both financially and performance numbers out of their practice management software. And then not only understand what the numbers are, but where they're at in relationship to where they really should be performing for a healthy level.
So really kind of training your dentist to be the CFO of their practice.
Yes. I mean, that's one of the areas that most dentists, I wouldn't say that they're weak in, they just don't spend a lot of time in it. Yeah. Once they see it and understand it, they thrive with that data.
Now let's fast forward. In by 2011, you had developed some really good metrics, some really good dashboard type ways to measure, and you were influenced on the technology side to really automate what you're doing, and you renamed your firm Dental Intel. I love the name, by the way, Dental Intel. And really, tell me if I've got this phrase right. I really think of it as a data visualization firm. You help your clients visualize the data in the performance of their practice.
Yeah, we help them visualize and act upon the data that they see. I mean, so often you'll be pulling reports at the end of a day or at the beginning of the day, and it'll tell you where you're at and what you did, but it doesn't give you any information on what you should be doing. Mm-hmm. And so our dashboard is an intelligent dashboard where it not only gives you data in a visual format, that helps you see what you need to do to improve performance and the overall value of your practice.
And for the most part, this data is automated. In other words, your system rides alongside the practice management software, and your system pulls the information from the practice management software if you have integration with it. And you're able to get data at a fairly deep level with the practice because it comes directly from the practice management software.
Yep. Once we're integrated, which happens within minutes, not weeks, but within minutes, we do a sync. We're pulling data directly from their financial software and from their practice management software. So we're able to put some unique algorithms together to really help them understand not just what's happening within their practice, but how is that affecting the overall bottom line of their practice as well.
Yeah, very cool. Hey, let's start at the top with just kind of helping our listeners understand the value in all this. I suspect that we're preaching to the choir, Weston. The listeners of the Thriving Dentist Show, obviously they're interested in developing a thriving practice. It's hard to characterize them, you know, as one, you know, amorphous group, because certainly we have listeners in 138 countries, for example. A wide cross-section of ages. We have a lot of young dentists that listen to this, but we also have a lot of senior dentists that listen to the Thriving Dentist Show. So it's not fair to talk about them as simply one type. Right. We have a diverse listenership, but let's help our listeners understand the importance of the topic. I'll just start, you know, with a fundamental question. Why is it important for providers, and that would be doctors and hygienists, to understand and improve their own personal case presentation?
That's a great question, Gary. I, you know, I've taken a lot of time focusing on case, and for one reason. There are two ways to increase the value and production in a dental practice. One is either by getting people into your chair, so attracting new patients into your practice and keeping those patients.
So we can grow our capacity.
You can grow your capacity. And the second is making sure that your patients are accepting the treatment that you're presenting. and assuming that all dentists out there are presenting the ideal dentistry, dentistry that needs to be performed.
You know, I'm glad you raised that point because, you know, if a listener happens to sort of, you know, they're maybe on their journey to master their clinical philosophy, you know, how they want to treat their patients. And can we agree that there's a radically different situation, Weston, between symptomatic recommendations and asymptomatic recommendations?
Absolutely.
So, you know, if the tooth hurts, your case acceptance ought to be darn near 100%, right?
Well, for sure it should be, but the problem is it's not.
Right. But it should be. I mean, if you're my patient and I'm the dentist and you know, your face is swollen, you know, 3 inches and you're in pain, you're not sleeping, I can say, you know, Weston, would you like that pain to stop?
Right. You should be getting 100% acceptance on that.
Now, can we agree it's an entirely different world if we're talking about asymptomatic treatment or ideal treatment? Very different.
Right. You can solve a problem that's not going to be the ideal solution for a mouth, but that doesn't mean that it's the best solution. You can solve it with a much lesser procedure, yeah, and it's not the long-term best solution for that patient.
So
most dentists understand that, but they have a hard time presenting it in a way to help the patients understand that.
My favorite quote that relates to this comes from the sports world of Wayne Gretzky. And I'm sure all of our listeners will recognize Wayne Gretzky, the number one all-time lead scorer in NHL history. My favorite quote goes like this: you miss every shot you don't take.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you have a patient in front of you that you know you can help with, say, cosmetic dentistry or adult orthodontics or whatever it is that we're talking about, if you don't present it to them, you're never going to get acceptance. And I think what we're talking about, and correct me if you feel differently about it, but what we're really talking about is a situation where doctors present ideal care and then we measure their effectiveness at that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And we're talking ideal as opposed to, you know, urgent or symptomatic care.
I have a really good example. Not long ago, one of my analysts was in a doctor's office waiting for the doctor for an appointment that they had together. And during this time, the doctor knew that he was meeting with him. So he walked out with the patient and basically handed the patient to the treatment scheduler up front and said what they needed to get done and to get this appointment scheduled.
A scenario that unfolds every day in our listeners' practices.
Right. This was a great situation. And the doctor said she's coming in and basically she needed to get a filling. And this was a three surface filling that this patient was going to be getting put on her tooth. And the patient looked at the doctor and said, "This is the best thing for me, right?" Those were the exact words that came out of her mouth. And the doctor kind of hesitated for a second and he said, "Well, this is going to solve the problem. We've got to get the cavity out and we've got to put a filling on there. And so this is going to solve your problem." And she said again, "Was this the best solution?" And the doctor again hesitated and said, "Well, no, I mean, the best solution for what's going on with this tooth would be a crown. Because we're going to have to," and he went through the reasons, "we're going to have to shave your tooth down, but I believe that we're going to still have enough room to put a filling on it. But we're going to have to shave it down to a certain extent where a crown is absolutely going to be better for this. Mm-hmm. And I'm covering three surfaces, so we might as well put a whole crown on it." And the patient said, "Well, that's what I want then."
You know, right?
This was a patient coming back to the doctor where the doctor, interesting enough, going into it a little bit deeper after this conversation with the patient, after the patient left, our analyst said, "Why wasn't this recommended before?" And he said, "Because it was too expensive for her." But yet she's scheduled for the crown. So he kind of prejudged her. And he didn't even recommend the ideal dentistry. He recommended something that he knew would work. It was still good dentistry, but it wasn't the ideal dentistry for her situation until she brought it back to his attention. And by asking a simple question, "Is this the best thing for me?"
Weston, may I share a tip from a colleague that both you and I know, one of my dear friends, Dr. David Hornbrook? May I share a tip that he offers in this realm?
Yeah.
So I had the privilege of spending last Wednesday with David out in Irvine, California. And David's been on the Thriving Dentist Show a couple of times. I'm bringing him back, by the way. David and I have known each other for many years. He's a general dentist. If you don't know of him, he's a general dentist that is probably one of the premier cosmetic dentists in the United States, happens to practice in San Diego, California. And David has a good way of doing this. David is a general practice. Patients come to him just like they come to you. which is, you know, I have a toothache. Can you fix it, doc? You know, that's not everybody comes to David's practice saying, do my smile,
right?
You know? And however, you know, when a patient's just interested in more patchwork dentistry, he'll ask the question, you know, maybe it'll be a tooth on the upper left. And David will say something like, Weston, if we take care of that tooth on the upper left that's causing you a problem, let's assume for a minute that we take care of that and we get it nice and healthy and we get that taken care of. Will you have the smile of your dreams?
That's a great question.
And what he's basically saying is,
say yes or no.
Right. Most people will say, what else? And oftentimes they'll say, well, no, I mean, not really. Cause I'm not happy. You know, they seem kind of dark. I'd like them whiter. So all of a sudden the treatment plan just changed.
Right.
You know, and then he'll ask the question, well, if we took care of the tooth on the upper left, Weston, and we got them whiter, cause we can do that today. Would you be happy with your smile? And guess what most people say even then? Well, no, because aren't these lower ones kind of crowded? You know, then all of a sudden the treatment plan becomes, you know, but he asked the question of, you know, if we took care of that, would you be happy with your smile? And it's a very useful way to engage the patient in a conversation about optimum care. Anyway, that was a little sidebar. It kind of reminded me to think about that.
At the same time, you're presenting options to make them feel good. You're not selling dentistry.
No.
They're the ones answering, no, I would like this fixed. It's a great question, Gary. Great question.
So we're on the topic of you know, why it's important to improve case presentation and case acceptance. And I believe that exists from all of our providers, whether it be at the doctor level or at the hygiene level. Hygiene too, it's simpler because there's a simpler range of services that we do. But when we know that 50% of the adults in the United States have an active infection in their mouth and they need periodontal therapy, this is a conversation that crosses over into hygiene as well.
Right. I mean, hygiene, this is probably, and in fact, hygiene is one of the areas that's going to create one of the greatest values in any dental organization. And hygienists need to understand not only how to diagnose, but how to present, how to present when they come up with a problem. So if they need to diagnose some SRPs, they need to know how to talk about the dangers of any of these diseases that their patients are possibly encountering or going to or have encountered and how to take care of it. And so oftentimes they don't know how to present it. And because they don't know how to present it, they don't diagnose it. And so it becomes almost a situation where they can only get told no so many times, so they just stop presenting. Mm-hmm. But if you start measuring it and you start measuring success, they start improving. It's the question is, how do you measure it? But it is critical for hygienists to diagnose.
Can I share a story from an actual case study related to this very topic?
Yeah.
So I had a situation a number of years ago where a client of mine had to have open heart surgery, and it was it kind of cropped up suddenly, and he was going to be away from his practice while he underwent this surgery. And we covered the situation with a coverage group. We had 12 dentists that I had set up ahead of time. Each dentist worked a week in the doctor's practice and covered for him while he was out having his open heart surgery. And the great news is he recovered and came back about 12 weeks later, and the practice was well taken care of in his absence. And by the way, these 12 doctors were not local. They were from out of the area that came in to help a colleague. And can you imagine? And by the way, only one of those 12 dentists had ever even been in this doctor's practice. Pretty cool, huh?
That is really cool.
Anyway, I'd meet him on Sunday night because they had not been in his practice, and I'd take him through the practice and I'd kind of show him around and help orient them. And I'd stay with him on Monday to support, you know, our visiting doctor. And then I'd leave, as I had work to do the rest of the week, I'd leave the rest of the week and the team would take care of our visiting doctor. And I'll never forget the first Monday, Dr. Mike Kozarski was visiting. Mike, I'll use his name because I want to give him credit for this. Mike was visiting from Woodinville, Washington, a great friend of mine. And as we're going through the morning huddle, the hygienist he went by Dr. K, Kozarski, Dr. K. Hygienist said, Dr. K, my 9 o'clock patient is a physician. And she said, I don't know how to put this nicely, but he's crusty. he's he's not really nice. He's kind of angry. And so whatever you do, don't bring up the filling that he needs to have done on the upper left. Don't bring it up. And Mike takes a look at the radiogram and says, well, I'm sorry, but I have a professional obligation. I have to bring that up. She said, well, fireworks are going to go off if you bring it up. I mean, he's nasty. He's crusty. And he will go off on you. And Mike just says, well, I'm going to bring it up. And she said, well, don't say I didn't warn you.
Good luck.
Yeah. So anyway, at the appointed time, Mike comes in. And now all the patients knew that these visiting doctors were coming in to help, you know, and he introduced himself. This was a physician. Sure enough, he was 17 years old and 72 years old and crusty.
Yeah.
And Mike says, Doc, I'm Dr. K. It's nice to meet you. I'm here covering for Dr. while he's out on his open heart surgery. It's nice to meet you. I understand he's recommended a filling for that area in the upper left. Doc, these kind of things. And meanwhile, the hygienist backed out of the room because she was ready for the fireworks. And he said, Doc, these kind of things don't take care of themselves. They don't get better. They get worse. Tell you what, your time's valuable here, Doc. We have you scheduled for a cleaning today, but we can move you into this room over here when we're done with your cleaning. I'll take care of that filling for you today and we'll save you a trip. What do you say? And he says, that sounds great. You do that for me? And Mike said, yes, we'll get that done for you. The hygienist had, I wish I would have taken a snapshot of her expression.
I love it. I love it.
Her expression was like, what just happened?
I bet. That is phenomenal. Hopefully they reschedule her for hygiene.
Exactly. You know, and actually we finished the hygiene appointment, moved him in the next room, did the filling. It was actually a couple of fillings.
Got it
all done in one visit. He walked out of there smiling and thanked the doctor for providing the treatment. Yeah. But you know, Mike shared with me afterwards, and this is why I'm telling the story. Mike said, Gary, this has been an invaluable week to me. Now, Mike has a brilliant practice in Woodinville, Washington. Brilliant by any way you want to measure it. By the way, Mike's an upcoming guest on the Thriving Dentist Show. You're going to get to hear from him. He's a great friend. And Mike has a brilliant practice. But at the end of the week, when we debriefed this, he said, Gary, I learned something. He said, you know what? I didn't know any of the baggage and the stories and you know, the history of any of these patients. And because of that, I could present purely. I just looked at the photos, looked at the radiographs, and presented to patients what was purely in their best interest. And he said, I have to tell you, as much, Gary, as you've taught me about not prejudging and not buying into the stories, I do that in my own practice. And he said, I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm just going to look at the radiographs. I'm going to look at the photos. I'm going to determine what's in the best interest of the patient, and I'm going to present it to him because I saw how well it can work when you present it from such a pure perspective here this week.
What a valuable lesson. I mean, a valuable lesson for me to hear again, too. Oftentimes, most dentists are doing just that. They're prejudging based on something. So they either don't recommend ideal dentistry, they recommend a lower cost fix, or they're not recommending at all, such as this experience that you just had here. What a great lesson.
Well, and you know this story, but Sam Walton, you know, the founder of Walmart, has since passed away. But do you know what kind of vehicle Sam Walton drove up until his death?
I don't know what he drove.
A Ford F-100 pickup.
Oh, that's awesome.
Now, if it's an F-100, you have to know a little bit about your vehicles here. That goes back to the late 60s, early 70s. He wore a Pendleton, usually he wore a pair of jeans and a Pendleton-type shirt that, by the way, you can get at Walmart. And he looked like he just came in off of the farm or off of the ranch. He's the second richest man in the world.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, we have a local character here in Phoenix that is well known for his philanthropy, and he has donated over $30 million anonymously. Never wants to be recognized for any of this, but he's donated over $30 million to local charities. And honest to goodness, Weston, if you saw him walk down the street, you would think that he was one step away from being homeless.
Love that.
I mean we know this, but and yet it's kind of easy to get sucked into the stories, right?
Yeah, we just don't know. And the thing is, if you don't ask, I think you said it better, if you don't swing, you're never going to hit.
Yeah, exactly. So
if you don't ask. And we, dentists need to remember, too, they're asking questions to help that patient. Now, there's a difference in asking questions to sell something that the patient doesn't need. But when they're either helping their confidence or when they're actually helping their oral health care and their hygiene, then they're asking questions that those patients need. And that is case. That's presenting a treatment, creating a case, and then trying to help that customer understand the value and accepting that case.
Well, let me amplify that as well. We know today that the health of a patient's teeth and gums are not just about their teeth and gums. It's about their overall body health. And what is that? What is good health worth? You know, really, sadly, we all know we all have instances in our personal lives where oftentimes people don't understand the value of that until it's gone.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, it really is the first wealth. You know, health is the first wealth. And the great news is there's never been a time in our history when people have been more interested in their health. Not necessarily their teeth, but their health. Would you agree with me?
I absolutely agree. And I think people sometimes take for granted even their teeth, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
They take it for granted. And so sure. The dentists are in such a great position to really be able to present the best treatment available for their patients that's going to keep them healthy and wealthy in the long run.
Right. Well, let's have the rubber meet the road here. Another question, and Weston, I've struggled with this for many years. How do providers measure case acceptance now? How do you measure this stuff?
I'll tell you what, you struggled for years. We probably spent with a team of 3 data analysts and some developers a good solid 6 months straight on this one metric.
So you've got thousands of man hours in this.
Thousands of man hours in it. And the reality is we came to the conclusion that out of the practice management softwares, there's no good way to identify one numerically on a global scale, how many cases were presented, and out of those cases presented, how many were accepted. Out of those that were presented and accepted, what was the ideal dentistry presented, and what was the dollars accepted out of those?
Well, I'm gonna amplify this, Weston, because you know statistics are actually pretty easy. I happen to enjoy baseball.
Yeah,
baseball is a numbers game, isn't it? If we want to track batting average,
right?
All we have to track is you know the number of times that person was at the plate and the percentage of time they got a hit. That's simple, right? Well, wait a minute. Isn't case acceptance simple? Just calculate the amount of dentistry that was presented versus the amount of dentistry that got accepted. Wouldn't that give us a case? My tongue is firmly planted in my cheek because it's not this easy. But wouldn't, wait a minute. If Weston, for example, I'll make this up, Weston.
Okay.
Let's say you're a patient that's been away from the dentist for 5 or 6 years for whatever reason, and now you're motivated to come in, and you come in, it's not exotic, but it's a fair amount of dentistry because you've had some deferred maintenance. You know, it's fillings, root canals, and crowns. And let's say your treatment, your case is $6,000.
Right.
And let's say you accept 4,000 of that. I'm just making up numbers here. Wouldn't we have a 66%, if I'm doing my math right, wouldn't we have a 66% case acceptance? And hey, isn't this easy? What's so hard about that?
Well, first of all, even tracking that by provider, how you're doing it there, that would be one great step, right?
Right.
But to even track that is still a manual process.
Oh, right. Because you're absolutely right. Because I'm fluent in all the software systems out there. Dentrix, EagleSoft, SoftDent, Open Dental, Easy Dental, name the other, you know, all of them, Mac Dental. I could go through all of them. I'm fluent in all of those. And none of them do a good job of helping us track our case acceptance percentage.
None of them are going to identify that at a global level or at a micro by provider level.
Right.
They're just not going to do it.
And then when you start to pull the information, let's say we did it manually for a while. So I set up a manual spreadsheet that we would just track this on our new patients. So we'd have an assistant enter in the size of the treatment plan, and she would calculate that. And then we'd have to go back and calculate what got scheduled. And keep in mind that I'm not really looking for what got scheduled. I'm looking for what got completed.
Right.
Because just because they scheduled it doesn't mean they came in.
No. And let's talk about schedule too. So if a patient, after you recommend a treatment to a patient, if they walk out the door without that treatment scheduled, your chances in now getting that scheduled within the neck between now and your next hygiene appointment are less than 50%.
Now, let me complicate it. Let's say that, back to my fictitious treatment plan with you, it's a $6,000 treatment plan. You've scheduled for your initial four, but let's say that over time you choose to have some of that pending treatment done, then how do you go back in and calculate this back in the calculation? The truth is, I struggled with this for years.
Yeah, that's a very difficult thing to deal with. And in fact, you have to have a system that's measuring and holding that data for that patient, right, and holding and measuring that data that's sitting in a treatment planner. And let's say that the next time they come in 6 months from now, they say, okay, I want to go ahead and get this scheduled. You need to know that that was part of that original case and that it's not a new case presented this time.
Right.
And so without having we tried to do the same thing, Gary, manually. We tried to do it over and over again.
And it was really, that old, GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. Then the data really didn't help us because the data was suspect.
Well, I always tell clients of ours or customers and even our analysts that bad data is worse than no data.
I would agree.
So now you're making decisions on data that's not true, and your decisions could be detrimental and completely opposite than what they should be. It's better to go off of emotion at that point than getting bad data.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. So let's fast forward. The benefit of appreciating technology, and you had some advisors that told you this needs to be automated. So how does Dental Intel measure case acceptance now?
Well, we it's not just purely case acceptance, but I'll go through how this works. I mean, sure. We look at a hierarchy of numbers that are all wrapped into case acceptance that we call case acceptance. And the first number that we're measuring or that we look at is the average dollars produced per case or per exam, I'm sorry. And there's different types of exams. I mean, we look at the comprehensive exam and we look at a periodic exam. And so the average dollars per case on those two different types of exams are going to vary as well. And we'll even get down into the details of the type of exam. But we look at that top dollar. And if that top dollar is not where it should be, the dollars per exam, then we know that we probably have some form of concern somewhere within the whole case presentation. So we take it down and we then look at if our dollars is sitting at an average of $230 per exam, then we drop that down and we say, well, how many exams is this doctor having in a day? Out of the doctor's exams in a day, how many diagnostics did he have? And what we mean by a diagnostic is, did something get hit onto the treatment planner? I don't care what that something is. Was there some form of code that they added to the treatment planner? If there was, then that doctor or that hygienist diagnosed something that they're saying needs to be done. So we carry this treatment or this diagnostic down to, if you're going to put it on the treatment planner, you need to talk to your patient about it. So that is a presentation. So now I'm presenting whatever I entered on the treatment planner in one way or another, whether I'm effectively presenting that or whether I'm ineffectively presenting that. So one way or another, I'm helping the patient see this is treatment that you're needing. Once we know how many exams that or diagnostics that they're now presenting or cases or treatments that they're now presenting, now we're actually able to grab those treatment procedures that entered in on that day with that unique patient, and we're able to say, out of these treatment procedures that were entered in, which one of them got scheduled? Whether it was scheduled that same day or whether it was scheduled in a future day, which out of they could have entered in 12 different ADA codes on that treatment planner. Mm-hmm. And we're going to identify out of all of those codes that they entered in, how many of those things were actually scheduled for actual treatment. And then we can carry that down the road and say how many of these were actually finished. But the other thing too is it's not just the quantity of how many procedures did we present and how many procedures accepted. It also goes down to sometimes we'll have a priority, meaning we may recommend this, but here's a less expensive option. And so we also carry this down to ideal dentistry, meaning here's the ideal dollars presented. This is what would be best for your mouth. But here's option two that you can do. And this can all be built out in your treatment planner. And Dental Intel grabs all of this data automatically every single night on every patient that comes in and then brings it to the surface and not just shows it overall by an office. We can break it down to say, here's all your restorative cases, here's all your elective cases, here's all your hygiene cases, and then even break it down further and say, here's your hygienist specific cases. So you can see Susan's cases compared to Jennifer's cases in the practice and really figure out what's going on. And the awesome part about this, Gary, is it creates a healthy data-driven culture, because if Jennifer starts seeing that she's getting 64% of all of her SRPs accepted and Susan is only getting 42% of them accepted, Susan's now asking Jennifer, help me out. Yeah. I mean, start self-training themselves. Yeah. What are you doing?
You know, I love this. For years I've talked about, I call it the triad, and the triad that I'm referring to is diagnosis, treatment planning, case presentation. Right. So the three, and there are three unique skill sets. Number one, you have to diagnose it. You have to see it, right. And you have to diagnose it. And by the way, that's, some might be listening and say, well, of course you have to see it. But I'm always amazed when my clients start to experience really high quality continuing education, perhaps from places like the Pankey Institute in South Florida, or from Dr. Frank Spear, here in Phoenix. When they start to experience that, all of a sudden they see things they didn't see before. I had a client of mine, Weston, you'll appreciate this conversation. He's in practice for 25 years and he came to me and said, Gary, I'd really like to improve my knowledge of occlusion. Can you recommend somewhere? And I recommended that he go down and take a course from Dr. Pete Dawson in St. Petersburg, Florida. And he called me three times from the course to say, thank you, Gary. I just wish I would have known this 25 years ago.
Right.
And he came back and he said, Gary, I am seeing evidence of occlusal disease that I've never seen before because I just didn't have those skills. But so the triad, diagnosis, treatment planning, case presentation, and doctors, of all the different things we could do to accelerate your practice, if you will work diligently on improving your skills in those three areas, diagnosis, treatment planning and case presentation, that can have a radical effect on your practice. And I'm going to suggest you do it from a data-driven model, because then it's not anecdotal, but it's data-driven. And Weston, I know that you and I are on the same page on this.
Yeah. And Gary, the great thing is we've figured out a way through the data in their systems to be able to measure this automatically. So the manual process is gone. And even if they don't have a process that is not automated, they still need to be measuring those three main areas. Yeah. They need to be measuring. And so let me give you an example. Can I share an example with you?
Please,
with the doctor that
please.
I met with a few months ago? He was really struggling. And one area, really quickly for doctors that are listening, to identify if they might have any form of an issue with case presentation or acceptance, they can quickly just look at the average dollars per patient, active patient produced in a year. And if that's less than $800, it's very likely that they are struggling with their case presentation. Now, whether that's in hygiene or whether that's with all of their providers, I don't know that yet. You have to drive down deeper. But if they're not at least getting $800 per active patient.
So you'd say that's a baseline goal.
Baseline metric. Really easy thing to look at. They take their active patients, and we hopefully everyone's measuring active patients the same. This is patients that you have seen at least once in the last 18 months. So take that number of patients. You can get that out of your practice management software. Look at the total production in your practice for that year, and then do the simple division. And if you're not at least sitting at $800, there is likely an issue with your case. The question is, where is the issue? So I was working with a doctor, and we were lighting up his dashboard for him. And he had worked with three different consulting firms over the last year, was really struggling. His production per active patient was sitting below $600. It wasn't horrendous, but it definitely wasn't where it needed to be. He had been practicing for over 8 years. He's on the East Coast. In New York, and actually in Manhattan in New York. Okay. And he'd been practicing for 8 years, doing okay, super, super busy, just seeing a ton of practices to keep up. But when we looked at his production per active patient, and then even drove that down to production per patient visit, his visit ratio was really doing good. He was seeing his patients on average 3.2 times a year. So on average, every patient he had, they were coming into his practice 3.2 times a year. He was doing a phenomenal job on his visit ratio. He was not doing well with his overall production. It came down to one metric. And we told him that, listen, your presentation skills need to improve. This is what, here's where you're at. Here's what's going on. And he said, ah, every consultant has told me this. I'm not doing enough crowns. And I said, hold on, hold on. We're not telling you you're not doing enough crowns. I'm not going to get into a specific procedure. You are the dentist. You'll know what needs to be done. But the numbers are telling us very clearly that you have some problems. Let's dive into case and look at what the problem was. The problem had nothing to do with him getting patients accepting his presentation. Not at all. He was doing a great job. In fact, if someone's over 65% on average of their presentations that they give are accepting, so 65% of all treatment that's being presented is being accepted, is pretty healthy.
Sure.
It would still like it higher than that, but it's pretty healthy. He was actually over 78% of all the treatment he was presenting was getting accepted. And so we looked into it a little bit further, and sure enough, I mean, ultimately it came down to he wasn't doing high enough dollar procedures, but it had nothing really to do with those either. The issue was he was only diagnosing only 32% of the patients that were coming to his practice. Those patients that walked out at the end of the day, only 32% of those had anything that ever hit the treatment planner. He was not taking enough time. So we asked him, what's going on? How are you evaluating your patients? And first of all, he didn't even visit with every single hygiene appointment. So he didn't perform an exam on every patient that came into practice. That was something he was able to change really quickly. A metric that we can point out really quickly, because we see the number of visits that come in for hygiene, we should be at least equal to that of those exams. A doctor should be seeing all hygiene visits that come in, unless they're coming in for some probings and something other than cleaning.
Sure.
But this is where his problem lied. He was on average spending less than 2 minutes per patient. He was zipping them through. He had no time because of the amount of visits that was coming into his practice to spend any type of time to really do a good exam.
So really kind of burning and churning through those exams.
They were coming in for hygiene. He was saying hi to them, making sure that they knew he was still there, looking really quickly for anything that was just easy to see through x-rays or on surface and not really doing any kind of deeper look. And we told him that he needed to spend some more time, and I didn't have any statistics on this, but we said increase it. Spend at least 5 to 8 minutes with your patient. And that's not even a lot of time, but we asked him to spend at least 5 to 8 minutes. And in order to do that, you're going to have to drop 8 visits a day. He looked at us like we were crazy.
This is an example of one of my favorite mindsets, Weston. And the mindset is this. Sometimes to go faster, you actually have to slow down.
Exactly.
Many of our listeners will know this, Weston. This is a little piece of personal information that you don't know. But outside of my family and my business and health, my two hobbies are riding motorcycles and racing cars. I happen to enjoy racing cars, and I have an instructor that helps me with racing. And he has a mantra. Oftentimes, we go out on the track, and he'll be in his car in front of me, and I'll be in my car behind him, and we'll be connected by radios in our helmets. And I can't tell you, if I had a $50 bill for every time he's told me this, I could be retired on my own private island somewhere in the world. But he says, Gary, to go faster, you have to slow down.
Yeah.
And what he means by that is he wants my control inputs to be smoother and to be more thoughtful, as opposed to being kind of herky jerky. And he said, to go faster, you have to slow down. And it's a mantra. And it's even gotten to the point, it's gotten kind of funny between himself and I, where he'll look at me and I'll say, I know, to go faster, I have to slow down. And that's kind of hard to get your arms around in dentistry, right? Because it's counterintuitive.
It was really hard. It's hard for most dentists. It was extremely hard for him. After fighting it for about 45 days, decided, okay, I'm going to slow my visits down.
I'll give myself into it. What the heck? This hasn't worked, so I'll try your thing.
Yeah, he tried it. And sure enough, today, this doctor is just over $1,000 of average production per patient.
Wow. So it's gone from less than 600.
And here's the thing that's crazy. he's working less days a week. He needs to see less patients to make the same amount of money.
An example of less is more.
Yeah, I mean, it's just completely changed his life.
So, Weston, you've developed something kind of cool there at Dental Intel that you're working on and still refining. It's kind of in early stage development yet, but you're calling it your case effectiveness score. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. We have, because case is so unique in itself, and there's so many aspects of case and really identifying who is really effective at presenting treatment and getting treatment accepted. And even if you get treatment accepted, the ideal dentistry accepted of that treatment. There's a variation of where you might be weak or where you might have strengths. And so because of that, we've taken what you've already talking about, this triad, the diagnosing, the presenting, and the acceptance of the dollars accepted or the ideal dentistry accepted, and put it all into one. And we're looking at a score, basically. We're scoring providers on where they are at in relationship to all three of those areas combined together. And we've really had a lot of fun with this. Obviously, there's nothing out there to benchmark it against. Right now, we have 150 dentists that we're scoring this on, actual 150 providers that we're scoring this metric on. And we've learned a lot of unique things, but we've got down to where we do have a benchmark, and we know that someone needs to be scoring over 800. Now, that number doesn't mean anything to anyone, but if they're not hitting 800, we know that they have a problem in either presenting, diagnosing, or helping the patient actually accept the best dentistry, which might not be the cheapest form of dentistry that will fix their problem. And at the click of a button, if their score is less than that, they'll immediately see where they're struggling at. It might be in one of the three areas. It might be in two of the three areas. But this is a way that someone could quickly, just at a glance, if they have an office of 15 providers or even two providers in their location, meaning one hygienist and one doctor, they can quickly see where their score is at. And if it's below where it should be at, they can quickly identify what area does this provider really need to work on and hone their training in on that one specific item. Doctors will spend thousands. I mean, I have clients that have spent $60,000 to $100,000 for a consulting package in a year. And really, they may only have one or two things that they really need to work on. The rest of their practice is doing great, but those one or two things could be really holding them back.
Right.
And so that's what this case effectiveness score is to identify. What area do they really need to focus on, and where do they really need some training?
Yeah, this is all so exciting to me. I love the data. I love the numbers. I love the science that it gives us to really learn where to become more effective in the practice. And Weston, I want to take a minute and say thanks. Thanks for all the great work that you do. Thanks for your commitment to our wonderful profession. And thanks for your passion for the numbers, man.
Yeah, it's fun. We love it. I'm learning. Dentists are learning. As long as we're all learning together, then we're succeeding. So,
yeah, I know that many of our listeners would like to be in touch with you. Weston, would you be kind enough to provide your website address?
Oh, absolutely. So really easy, dentalintel.com. So www.dentalintel.com. And if anyone wants to just shoot me an email, I will personally try to take as many as I possibly can.
And give me your email address. I'll put that in the show notes for our listeners as well.
Yeah, my email is Weston, so Weston, @dentalintel.com.
Perfect. And if you're driving, do not take your hands off the steering wheel. We advocate safe listening.
No.
So don't take your hands off the steering wheel. In the show notes, which are available at TACAS, T-A-K-A-C-S, learningcenter.com, TACAS learningcenter.com, I will provide Weston's website address, which again is dentalintel, D-E-N-T-A-L-I-N-T-E-L, .com. And then his email address is Weston, W-E-S-T-O-N, @dentalintel.com. I'll put those in the show notes so you can be one click away from connecting. And do me a favor, reach out and connect with Weston. He's from Provo, Utah, one of my favorite parts of the country. I actually get to spend a fair amount of time right up the canyon from you, Weston, at Sundance.
Oh, yeah. Actually, Gary, I think I met you at Sundance years ago.
You know, I think we did. We met many years ago up there at a dinner meeting we were having up at Sundance. So, but hey, now you've got a friend. If you're listening to the Thriving Dentist Show, you've got a friend in Utah. And by the way, you ought to go visit Weston in the winter.
Good skiing.
Yeah, I mean, champagne powder. Let's finish the interview on a fun topic. For our listeners that don't know what champagne powder is, would you educate them,
Weston? Oh, man. It's the best snow that you can find in the world. It's untouched, and it's just the perfect texture. Although last winter, we didn't get any.
That's because it's saving up for next winter, right?
This winter is going to be the one. This is the year. So if you're going to come skiing, this is the year to come.
So, hey, guys, you now have a friend in Utah. And if you want to experience some of that champagne powder, reach out to Weston and his team. And I'm sure they'd love to show you a good time on the slopes. So, Weston, again, thank you. Thanks for all that you do. You've got a wonderful team. I know many of your team members personally. You guys are deeply committed to helping your colleagues in dentistry. And I thank you for that. And love the work that you're doing. Happy to connect you with our listeners. Hey, as a listener to the Thriving Dentist Show, thank you. We appreciate you. We love what we do here at the Thriving Dentist Show, but we try to remember that we couldn't do what we do if it wasn't for you. I have a request. I've decided strategically that the Thriving Dentist Show will be available free, as it always has been, and my plan is to continue that in the future. If you appreciate the work that we're doing at the Thriving Dentist Show, if you'd take a minute and go to iTunes and write us a review, that would be a wonderful way to support the work that we're doing. If you go to iTunes, click on the podcast tab, type in Thriving Dentist Show, and my show will come up. If you click on the image of the show, you'll see a spot where you can write reviews and comments. And if you'd be kind enough to write a review, that will be helpful to us. That will allow us, allow more dentists to be able to find us. So on that basis, let me simply say thank you and let you know I'll look forward to connecting with you on the next Thriving Dentist Show.
When you cry, be sure to dry your eyes, 'cause better days are sure to come. When you smile, be sure to smile wide, and don't let them know that they have won. And when you walk, walk with pride. Don't show the hurt inside, because the pain will soon be gone. And when you dream, dream big, as big as the ocean blue. When you dream, it might come true. When you dream, dream big.